6:30, almost 6:35.
Recording in progress.
Today is May 28th. It's the regular meeting of the Zoning Board of Adjustment of Candia. If you'll stand, please, so that we can say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We need to do roll call. Ron, start with you.
Ron Howe, here.
Bill Keena, here.
Judith Sod, here.
Gail Pellegrino, here.
Tony Steinmetz, here.
Boyd Chivers is excused tonight, so Mrs. Pellegrino will sit in for Mr. Chivers tonight. So we have a full board tonight. And before we start tonight, I need to address a comment in Mr. Swinarski's new submission where he asks that I should, it states that I should recuse myself from this meeting. After the last meeting, I contacted the town attorney. The town attorney listened to the tape of the meeting. The town attorney quoted RSA 673.14. And interesting that Mr. Swinarski, you left off the last sentence, which says reasons for disqualification do not include knowledge of facts gained in the performance of a member's official duties. So our attorney has instructed that I read the following statement. At the hearing of March 26, 2024, I explained my concerns with this application as it relates to the surrounding neighborhood and the need to make sure that the public safety is considered. I am certainly open to considering all five variance criteria and have not prejudged this application. I look forward to weighing the evidence that comes before this board, including the public safety component. And it is my understanding that we have a completely new application tonight, so that you have changed the application, so we're ready to hear your application, and if you're ready to present your case, please go ahead.
All right, thank you very much. As the board knows, my name is Chris Swinarski. I'm an attorney with Divine Millamette representing Rick Wenzel Oil and Candia Tank Farm LLC, who owns the property. So I think the board is probably aware, since our last meeting, what we did is decided to eliminate the propane facility. So it is the same application minus the propane facility. Still an expansion of the current business there. So basically now the proposal is simply to add two 15,000-gallon fuel oil tanks and one 40,000-gallon fuel oil storage tanks. So three tanks total. They're proposed in the same place on the plan as they were before. There's not going to be any tree clearing for that. That space is already open. I don't know if any board members have been to the site. Several members of the public have. The area is open, so no tree clearing. So in light of the changes, I think your third-party consultant's review concluded that its concerns were largely addressed because they were focused on the propane facility, as were the boards and the towns. And the only concerns noted were about some screening that was discussed with an abutter. I don't know that the board discussed the screening or raised the issue. When I reviewed the minutes and the video, I didn't see that. I know an abutter raised the issue, and my response to that was that we'd be happy to provide some screening and to work that out at site plan review with the planning board, because that's really the board that has jurisdiction over those sorts of things. So, you know, with really these major changes as I see it in terms of addressing the concerns, I think it seems pretty clear that the variance criteria are now met. The fuel oil poses no threat to public safety, as we discussed at length at the last meeting. Essentially, in terms of spills, there is a containment dike that is specifically designed to contain any spill. We meet the NFPA and exceed it in several places, as was discussed at length, and Mr. Coluccio is here to answer any additional questions you may have. And also, you know, it's hard to imagine and articulate how the essential character of the locality would be changed, and that's one of your state law variance criteria as well. This business and this use has existed without incident for 30 years or so. I'm not sure if it's exactly 30, but pretty close. So really, this proposal is just an expansion of that without any major site work, without any major clearing. And that's an expansion largely because the demand and growth of the community has expanded as well. It's a natural outgrowth. As far as property values, which is your fourth criteria, we did submit a professional opinion, and that opinion concluded that this proposal, even with the propane facility, would not have a negative impact on property values. To date, we have not seen any other evidence that controverts that analysis that we submitted. So I think it's pretty easy to find that that criteria has been met. And as for the hardship under state law, in the context of a variance to expand an existing business, the uniqueness is pretty simple. This is the one property that already has the business, and that's what makes it unique. And then the hardship there is that without being able to expand, we cannot expand a business that essentially has a customer base that demands more service now. It's grown. This community has grown. And when I say community, it's not just Candia. It's really the surrounding community. And then as an alternative criteria, you can consider whether or not the use is a reasonable one. Hard to say it's not. It's been there already for 30 years. So I think the meeting of the five variance criteria under state law are pretty clear and pretty uncontroverted. Now, I do realize that that your emergency management director, which I'm not sure is an official position in town, submitted
I'm sorry, would you repeat what you just said?
I'm not sure it's an official position. I think it's a volunteer position.
So does that make it not official? I'm a volunteer. I'm a volunteer, so are you saying that I'm not an official person?
Board member.
Yes, he is a volunteer, but that doesn't mean he's not an official part of our community.
I'm sure he's part of the community. He lives in town, right?
Well,
yes,
he's appointed by the selectmen, am I correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay, great. So,
I believe so.
In any event, much like the submission about propane, which was basically Google searching and finding YouTube videos that I was provided, and I appreciate that. This, again, was Google searching and based upon what was characterized as in being on the NFPA website. The reality, however, is that that was not on the NFPA website. That was on a blog written by a student that's hosted on the NFPA website. And I'll give you a copy of this, but it's important to note at the end of the article that he references and that he relies upon, it says, "Important notice, any opinion expressed in this column, blog, article is the opinion of the author and does not necessarily represent the official position of NFPA or its technical committees. In addition, this piece is neither intended nor should it be relied upon to provide professional consultation or services." And the author is a student. I'll submit for your record just a copy of that so you can see it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh.
So now, on the flip side, we had actual licensed engineers giving you testimony for hours last meeting about the safety standards, and they're here again to answer any questions you may have about that one-page letter. You know, so to the extent you have any questions about that, about the site as has been changed, We're happy to answer them, but there is nothing new that has been added. There are simply things that have been removed from the several hours we've already talked about. So I don't intend to go into a brand new presentation because it's information you've already heard.
Okay. Anybody have any questions from the board?
No.
Bill, do you have any questions?
Not yet. Well, I just want to be clear. How many tanks and what is the amount of the existing facility or tanks?
The existing? I don't know off the top of my head.
I believe it's. I've heard 29,000 and 30,000.
The existing facility has two 10,000 gallon tanks, a 5,000 gallon tank, and a 4,000 gallon tank, totaling 29,000 gallons.
Two 10,000.
One 5,000 and one 4,000.
So, if I could follow that up, does that present a problem for you in terms of loaded tankers coming in and not having room in the tank and? You're
100%.
Down almost to nothing before you can put a tank on.
We are multiple times a day, we are down to nothing in the middle of the winter. So our timing is very challenging to manage throughout the heating season because you bring in 10,000 gallons at a time. The two 10,000 gallon tanks hold heating oil, which only holds 18,000 gallons. Right. So you can't bring in two full tanks at a time. And each truck that we deliver with takes just about 3,000 gallons out at a time. So three drivers a day, two loads a day, 18,000 gallons. You can imagine the logistics are mildly challenging. The purpose of the proposed expansion will help us not be so reliant on very detailed time restraints and honestly we're lucky we don't have more issues. The company we work with is very prompt as far as how fuel comes in and when it goes out.
Thank you.
So you're going from 29,000 to something like 84,000 on the site.
It would be 99,000.
99,000.
Because you have 40 plus the 215s.
Oh, 215s. You're right, I forgot the 715.
So it'd be 99.
So we're tripling... more than tripling the amount of fuel on site.
Yes.
I thought you had three 10,000 gallon tanks.
It's always been the two 10s, the 5, and the 4.
I think it was permitted. Chad Brandon with Fieldstone Lake Consultants, I believe it was permitted for 30,000 gallons. And so the initial permit said 30, so that might be why you were thinking there was three tens, but it ended up being a 29,000 gallon facility because.
Is this the first I'm hearing this?
We presented this.
I mean, I thought it was 30,000 from somewhere. I got this information. I don't know where, but now you're clearing it up. It's fine. Okay, thank you.
So, how is the traffic going to increase with this?
It would actually decrease.
It's going to decrease. Less deliveries are needed.
There will be no change in the traffic. I'm not growing my business by double the size. The benefit of this for me is not having to be so reliant on exact delivery times. For example, in the middle of the winter, I'll have fuel come in before my guys start at 7. Then they'll take the fuel out, and then another truck comes in between 7 and 10, just so I can get through the day. So this will allow me to spread out those delivery times, not be so reliant on exact, terminal challenges, things of that nature that could potentially throw my whole daily operation out the window.
And that's why I was suggesting that the traffic would actually, and when I mean traffic, it's the deliveries, the tanker truck frequenting the site would be able to be reduced because he would have more capacity on site. And
but you're still going to deliver oil one way
more.
Or the other.
You would still deliver it, but it wouldn't have to happen, as pinpoint and accurate and critical as it is currently.
Having been in that situation, I know what a problem it is.
Bob Coluccio from Web Engineering. you may not be able to take a full load
right.
when that truck comes in.
Right.
So with the 40,000 gallon tank, he'll be able to take a full load every time. So it's the number, the amount of oil will be the same, but it will just be more predictable that it's going to be 10,000 gallons at a shot instead of 8 or 7 or 9, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't make a lot of, I'm having a little trouble figuring out how the, if you're adding, if you're tripling the size of your storage capacity, how you're going to have less traffic.
Less in a particular, so like, for example, on the days that I need to have 2 loads come in, the following day, depending on staffing, I may have none. So it's just going to spread it out. So I may only have 1 every day, or 1 might come in on a Saturday. The traffic won't increase, but it will remain the same.
Well, the traffic in won't increase, but the traffic out, I mean, if you have 99,000 gallons, you want to deliver more, right?
It's just helps me with logistics.
It's the same either way. Yeah, he's got
right.
X amount of oil he's bringing in and out. It just depends when you do it.
Right. So
and
the traffic
this
won't
spreads it out more. That was why I asked that question, because I've been in that situation of not being able to put a load of oil in the tank, and it's a problem. Nobody wants to deliver half loads.
Right.
It's expensive.
Right.
Can anyone here speak to the effing fire and how much fuel was on site and what the area of the burn was and how far the cloud of smoke went that would maybe affect residents?
Yeah, I think Bob can speak to that. We did cover that quite a bit at the last one in terms of the difference between that facility and this facility and why that's not a valid comparison necessarily, but Bob has quite a bit of information about that. Do you want to comment on that, Bob?
Well, the fire started sometime in the... I read through the... I wasn't completely prepared because it's been like 2 months since I got the report from the state fire marshal. But the gist of it is that the fire started in an engine, and then from the engine it spread...
Of a truck, is that correct?
Of a truck, yeah. It was the engine. Now these... And it wasn't a heater. It was probably an old engine that was covered in that had a lot of oil in it that might have caught on fire. And then they had the trucks parked like right on top of each other. So when one started to catch fire, it easily spread. But we're going to be separating the vehicles.
Where are the trucks going to be parked in this plan?
Currently, there would be parked next to the existing power shed, which is near the existing facility. There is room underneath the overhang for trucks to be parked, but that would...
We're talking the warehouse?
Ron, could you send one of those down this way? There's a bunch in there.
Yeah, it's a one-page plan.
They're all the same.
Okay.
Get you whatever.
And then the grading and the flow of the oil once the tanks were breached, as I understand it, was a significant factor in it. Right, which I don't...
Could have been avoided.
Yeah, I don't think that was designed. I don't know when it was designed, but we do have that in our design.
So
kind of where I was going. We have a containment dike and grading that if there's a spill, which that was essentially a spill, is what that was.
Yes.
There was a fire that breached a tanker truck, and that caused that truck to leak, and the grating caused that oil to spread everywhere.
It's saturated, and I think it was a gravel parking lot, if I'm not mistaken. And so it just, the oil kind of just stayed in that vicinity. But this would be a state-of-the-art facility where, you know, the grades would be such where, you know, there wouldn't be, you know, pooling of fluids necessarily. They would grade essentially back into the, like, for example, this area here where the containment dike is and then the canopy is, that area would grade back into that containment area in the dike area. So, you know, if there was a truck parked in this area, there wouldn't be a situation where there would be
fuel oil pooling below.
Now, are the trucks parked in an area that would feed into a containment area? Is that what you're saying?
That's not what I mean. Currently, the trucks are parked over by the existing facility here.
Yeah.
You know, there is room, you know, under that canopy area where a truck could be parked there. I mean, certainly they're going to be there for, you know, fueling and such. So there could be a vehicle under this canopy. But, you know, there's ample area here, and we're going to have a hard surface, and it's going to go through a significant review on a, you know, on a state level relative to, you know, the dimensions and such.
I need to understand this in basic terms. So the fire didn't start at the tanks. Yeah, I think it started at a truck, right?
It was that facility is not a bulk storage facility. That was one of their properties, as far as we know. I don't know how much fuel were in each truck.
So there were no tanks other than the trucks?
Correct.
Yeah, well, I think there was what I want
three
to understand exactly.
I don't know the specifics of, as far as if there were three or four trucks, and I think four of them caught fire. Each of them had up to 2,800 gallons in them.
So it was less than 12,000 gallons total, and that the fire was
correct.
That enormous, right?
Yeah, because it wasn't an oil facility. It was a bunch of oil trucks parked in a parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Right, there was no, as far as like fire alarms and notification, things of that nature.
No design
right.
Safety.
You know, as I've mentioned in this meeting before, I happened to be there that night, and it was, you know, quite the conflagration. It was very concerning, and I would never want to vote for something that would put our citizens in danger. I could never live with that. And
see that?
I hope you couldn't either, right? So I just want to be, I am endeavoring to understand how that could not ever happen here, but I don't yet understand that. Because if trucks can park together and an engine can get hot and oil can spill and a fire can happen that bad with a one-tenth of the kind of oil we're talking about here, help me believe how that cannot, is not, you know, not 90% certain, but 100% certain that it can't happen. And that if it did, I'd need to understand what, right? If it's not a certainty, if there isn't certainty, what is the possibility, what are the safeguards, and what would happen if the worst happened? I mean, that's, we have to think about that. This is a safety issue.
Yeah.
Or at least we have to consider that.
And and that's what we're explaining. So two different types of things, as these gentlemen said.
I would really rather talk to the guy that read the report, unless you could speak to the report with expertise.
Which report?
The report of the fire, the incident in Epping.
Okay, you asked to clarify it in simple terms, so I'm just going to offer that.
But I appreciate that, but I want to understand what happened there, and then how that couldn't happen here. That's my question. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's what I was about to explain.
You can, if you're expert in this, please do.
Bob's the expert. What I would like to explain is the simplified version that you asked for. It's two different facilities. One was oil trucks parked in a parking lot,
mm-hmm.
with no thought put into the design of the facility to contain the oil once the tanks were breached. The facility we're proposing, as Mr. Brannon said, is a state-of-the-art facility where if tanks were breached,
mm-hmm.
The oil will not pool under the trucks. That was the cause of the problem. The oil is designed in our facility, if that were to ever happen, to go back to the containment dike, and that's designed with site grading.
I understand that about the containment dikes, as was explained in the prior meeting.
Yep.
So the Epping, right? The elements that have been said, but just to kind of put them all in a chain. If you have an engine fire. Now, an engine fire is not that common, right? I mean,
right. But it could happen.
And
I
spoke to the state fire marshal, Sean Toomey, and he gave me numbers of the infrequency with which it happens. If you think about all of the oil trucks that are parked every night in New Hampshire or even New England, we're into the hundreds of thousands.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this was a freak event where an engine caught fire. And where it melted tires, it melted, it got hot.
Right.
And then it was parked in close proximity to other trucks. And when the oil came out of those trucks, it didn't have anywhere to go. And so part of what we've been always, we've been, you know, in our inside conversations is that we're going to not have our surfaces pool up underneath the trucks. We're going to, you know, have them pitch somewhere where it would be not danger the trucks if the oil was leaking out.
So let me just get that clear. You're not going to have trucks congregated as that.
They'll be in a general area, but we're going to, you know, come up with a spacing between them that we feel will prevent that spacing. And we probably will talk to the state fire marshal and get their recommendation, see if they came up with something in that report.
Mm-hmm. Could that be put into this proposal that once you've had the chance to do that, that there's a commitment of, there's an understanding of the distance that need to be apart,
mm-hmm.
and there's a place that's designated for that, and that you would guarantee that would happen so that such an event could be avoided?
And I would suspect that the planning board would be just as concerned about it, and so,
correct.
You know, they're not,
I imagine they would.
They're going to sign off on it after, I'm sure they're going to read the minutes of this.
And it's important to point out that this facility will be reviewed by the agency that published that. State Fire Marshal's office will review. Correct me if I'm wrong, but
they will only review it informally with the DES. The DES, the New Hampshire DES, is the one who enforces the fire code,
right,
on new designs. And I know that, you know, the DES and the State Fire Marshal have monthly meetings where they discuss all of the concerns.
The point is this is certainly a topic that will get reviewed at a much higher level, even for the, you know, the state permitting. And they look at, you know, Bob's fire safety, you know, analysis and really, you know, evaluate the concerns that you're raising, which, you know, they certainly don't want to see these situations occur, but they do understand the details and the differences between sites and the fact that, you know, this site is going to be a permitted site. There's going to be, you know, fire suppression on site. There's going to be, you know, certain things that we've worked with, you know, the fire department on. This facility is a certain distance to a, you know, very large water source. So there's a lot of differentiating factors, you know, details, you know, hard surfaces, grading, separation between, you know, buildings and facilities. And so there's so many differences between the two that it's hard to compare these sites, because as, you know, Attorney Swiniarski stated, the other site was not, to my knowledge, a approved bulk, you know, plant facility. So it didn't go through the level of review.
So it was essentially a gravel parking lot.
It's a parking lot.
And these trucks were together, and luck ran out on one of those trucks, and it spread from one to the other and caused that issue.
But the saturation is key, too. The trucks have been parked there, been leaking there for who knows how long. The ground was saturated. That's the determination. So it really is something very, very different. As Chad and Bob have been saying, there is no review of a parking lot by DES. The NFPA does not have any parking lot standards.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the governing bodies that really set those standards. And you know, while any zoning decision could certainly say you have to be subject to them, we are anyway,
mm-hmm.
Without a doubt. And those are the bodies that have that jurisdiction and that expertise.
Mm-hmm. But with 8 times the fuel on site, we want to make sure of that, right? I want to make sure that I understand how that truck situation couldn't happen, that if it did, it would be limited to that vehicle and not reach the tank, all of that, right? So
with the elimination of the propane tanks, I think that we have more latitude to, they have five trucks.
Yeah.
They're all identical. There's not a, that was a, at the Epping, there was a mix mash. They had, maybe a construction truck was involved.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, we probably will have the liberty of giving some, you know, putting adequate spacing between them.
So I heard you say that the ground was saturated. So is it common for these oil trucks to leak?
No.
No.
Then why was the ground saturated?
I think
it was a gravel surface. So when that tanker started to leak, it didn't flow appropriately away from the truck into a containment area like we're proposing here. It saturated that media below, you know, the truck and stayed in that area.
That's a good clarification, because I thought I thought I heard what you did, which was it had been saturated.
It had been saturated for a while, for months.
I mean, I'm not familiar with that site, but knowing
my mistake, I didn't say that clearly. I'm sorry.
In knowing the materials, I mean, I can't speak for how other people, you know, take care of their equipment. If the site was even permitted for those trucks to be there, there's so many different things. That's why we want to speak really about this site and, you know, how this is going to be, you know, constructed and built and how it's going to meet all of these standards, because that's what we know. It's so hard to compare this site to a, you know, a situation that wasn't the same. Yeah. It's not apples to apples.
So what, trucks, what, oh, I'm sorry.
Just follow up on that. The trucks would be Wenzel trucks, right?
Correct.
So is there inspection of those, or, and then of the big delivery tankers? I would think there's inspections, or is that not true? For safety.
The large tanker delivery trucks just come on site, they park on
right.
the concrete.
Right, I get it. But the other ones might be coming in, they might stay overnight, they might be staged, right? And then fueling up and going out in the morning, that sort of thing.
Potentially, and I mean, they all undergo state inspections, and I mean, our mechanic goes through them regularly as far as just, you know, oil changes, and, you know, our guys are doing free trips every single day, you know, to identify potential issues with, you know, engine issues, brake issues, things that would potentially cause a truck fire are being looked at every single day by our drivers. And I mean, that's
but there's no more, there's no different, the controls aren't different or special for Wenzel oil, right? So it's
versus
whatever that group was up there at Epping, yeah.
Generally, no, they're all designed similar.
But there was other trucks involved in that fire, so we just don't. The report did not talk about the condition of the. It could have been very oily underneath
right,
the trucks.
Right. You know? I'm just looking for anything that can give me and hopefully this board, you know, confidence.
Pavement is much easier
this
to keep clean.
This will not happen here. This could not happen here. That the measures, the design, the process, the controls are different.
I don't think it's possible to say that anything is impossible. That's not a reasonable request. It could happen, a car could catch fire outside. The design elements that go into the facility themselves, you know, the fire, you know, the fire alarms, the overfill protection, the rapid release, you know, alarms, the smoke detector system that,
right.
you know, if something were to happen, our response would be minutes.
And none of that existed. None of that was in that parking lot.
So whether
that's,
it's a
that's
truck,
a great point.
Whether it's a truck or it's the fuel facility,
yep.
the design elements of the property are going to allow for response to be far greater, far more ready to react. Because, again, you can't say never.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not a safe word.
If there was a fire,
but we can mitigate.
Can you talk about the fire suppression? Just refresh us on that. The fire suppression.
Well, we will have a detection system so that the fire department will know about it.
Yep.
But oil does not. You know, number two fuel oil is a class two combustible liquid as opposed to gasoline, which is considered a class one flammable liquid.
Mm-hmm.
It's not considered to be flammable. It's combustible. And so as such, NFPA does not require a fire suppression system as far as number two fuel oil goes.
Hmm.
Because it says it in the NFPA handbook that, you know, it's not likely that number two fuel or class two liquids stored in a closed container that's, you know, with proper ventilation is going to will result in a flagration.
What about kerosene?
We do not sell or deliver kerosene.
You don't.
Kerosene is still a class two liquid.
Okay.
But that's an important thing to point out too from your emergency management director's report. Fuel oil is not a flammable liquid.
Right.
You can't light it on fire with a match. That's why diesel cars don't have spark plugs. It's not flammable. But I think he makes that assumption and says that it is. So we want to make sure we're being accurate here.
Who makes the assumption?
The other question
your
I
emergency
have, I'm sure it's in the report
director.
You're not going to have any number four oil on site, right?
No, sir.
So you don't have heaters and all of everything.
There's no, and the I wrote the fire a hazard analysis of for our last hearing, and I go into that as part of the NFPA. It's a chapter 66 of NFPA 1. You know, one of the things that they do is you have to evaluate that.
So I do want to just go back one second. One more question. Thank you for helping me to understand this better. There's no fire suppression on site then. There's detection.
We're providing a
release valves. There's all these, you know, ways the fuel can drain. But if it were to catch fire, you're depending on the fire department to get over there with some hoses and
if the tanks catch fire,
pond over here, right?
Well, we have a cistern, a 10,000 gallon cistern that's going in. And I, in that hazard review, I did some calculations using an NFPA document that was for fire suppression, not for hose stream, but it gave us the best indication. And the 10,000-gallon cistern what we want to do is you want to cool the liquid. So if we have a fire in the dike, you want to cool it. And once you bring it down below its flash point, which is 125 degrees Fahrenheit, water is a perfectly fine medium to do that.
Even in this new plan, you would be storing LP tanks on site or not?
That is not on the plan.
No, it's not. Nope. Okay, so you wouldn't have any propane of any type.
That's not the plan.
Okay.
And it's important to point out that we did, you know, we have the 10,000 gallon cistern on site. We have the, you know, a monitor nozzle, proposed. This was all part of a discussion and agreement that we had with the fire department, the fire chief, and then the fire pond right across the road from, you know, the town hall here is about 1,600 feet away. And the capacity of that fire pond is massive, for water supply. And it was determined that that would be adequate considering the distance from the facility and the, you know.
Can I ask our fire chief to validate that?
Sure.
Yeah, like, what I see here. 1,000 gallons in there, plenty of water. So if I may for a second, I was at that effing fire. And I'm sure you thought it was a big fire. To me,
it was to me.
To me, not too bad. It wasn't a big deal to me. I've been to a lot of fires, so it wasn't. And I don't mean to make light of it, but it wasn't a big deal. What happened is they flowed water for probably 45 minutes, I would guess, and they couldn't do anything with it. They couldn't put it out. They called Pease for a foam truck. Pease only has one truck available down there. They couldn't send it. They sent Manchester. They asked Manchester to come out with foam. They pulled up 45 seconds from the time they started putting foam on that big fire. It was out. 45 seconds, because I was standing there. I watched the foam come out, and it was out.
How long was that from when, I don't know, when we think it started or the trucks?
I don't know the exact time. Probably 45 minutes, maybe. 45 minutes, but they called a lot of tankers. They called all southern New Hampshire tankers down there. And in the end, we only dropped one load, and I think one other truck dropped a load, and they pumped off the hydrant that was there, but they never used any of the tankers.
How much water does a fire truck hold, by the way?
We have two 1,000-gallon pumps and a 3,500-gallon tanker. So we have 5,500 gallons on wheels.
Ready to, and you're steps away.
And
right.
First alarm, well, looks like had a tanker, it got crashed, but they're getting another one eventually. You know, Auburn's got the tanker, Raymond's got a tanker, Chester's got a tanker, Deerfield's got a small tanker, but that's just in the radius.
And you would use the cistern? You'd hook up to the cistern? Is that the idea? Is that how that works?
I think he would use your own liquid, your own water first, and while he's hooking up to our cistern, he'd be... He'd have water going.
The sister would buy us a little time to lay a line from the pond, but I'll tell you, that was an eye-opening thing for me. I learned from that I would call for foam immediately, and as quick as Manchester could get out here, they could put it out. No question, no question. Because I saw it happen. You saw the fire.
Happened to be there that night, yeah.
So the quick answer is to use foam, but are there some environmental issues?
Not that type. It's not AFFF. It's not the bad stuff.
How can you have a good stuff?
Class A foam is not a bad foam.
Okay. What is the bad foam? What is the bad foam?
AFFF. We don't use it anymore.
Who uses that?
Well, they would use it. We could use it at an old worst. You can use it, but you got a lot of paperwork to do afterwards to prove that it was worthy to use it.
So then
there's a lot of cleanup too.
Yeah, right. You have an environmental disaster, PFAS, and
with that stuff. Oh,
cancer.
Sure. That's why there's so much problem that peas and they call it, because they trained with that stuff forever and ever and ever and ever down there.
Right.
They didn't necessarily use it on airplane fires, but they were trained with it.
So from a fire department, that wouldn't be your first choice to go to.
Not AFFF. No, no.
Mr. Young, this facility's been here for 30 years, I believe. In that time, why doesn't Candia have foam?
We have foam.
Oh.
We have foam.
But not volume.
Not enough. Not enough, probably, to put
not
that
enough
out.
For a worst-case scenario?
Because those trucks can shoot foam from here to the pond. We wouldn't be able to.
You were just here to the
deck
wall?
Deck gun wouldn't reach. We wouldn't want to get that close if it was burning like an epic.
Okay. Thank you.
I know that I read in the paper that after that fire in Epping, that UNH shut down their water from some of the rivers or the tributaries that come through there because they were concerned about the foam that was used and that there was a cleanup. So I mean I don't know if there's a difference between what you know and what they reported, but it seemed that the foam they used had substances in it that perhaps were not advantageous to the environment. And I'd like to ask Bob Panic to come in on this and add if anything that you have in your unofficial position.
Anytime a product that's other than straight water is introduced into whether it be a residential well, whether it be a domestic water system or anything like that, or leaches into runoff water or anything, rivers and stuff, is always going to be a potential for an environmental cleanup. And I know that when going back to Epping quite a few years ago, when I forget whether the foam truck for the J.P. Noonan tanker truck that many of us probably drive by, that bald spot on 101, that was an environmental disaster, and it still has to be tested on an annual basis because the foam was laid down. So these are things that, and UNH and the water system that flowed through, they were very concerned. And of course, things like PFAS and a multitude of other chemicals that are out there, including oil that may or may not flow into some form of water drainage or source, is gonna raise some eyebrows.
We can get you information on the phone because it doesn't sound like anyone's sure what happened, other than that there was concern.
Well, right now there's a lot of questions about what foam is being used and when. Typically, Dean, back me up. The AAA, Class A foam was typically used for structural firefighting, and AFFF was used for chemicals and fuels and all that kind of thing. So it's going through quite a transition at this point. I'd like to know who was driving the truck and which foam they were using.
I was told it was Class A foam. But like you said, they're going to check
usually
no matter what.
And I think it's important to point out that the, these trucks are over the road. I mean, the whole concept of fire protection and such, I mean, I'm sure that, the professionals that are addressing these situations are going to use what's most appropriate. And, then hopefully, you know, that there won't be an impact. But we have an existing site here that has existing, you know, tanks, and we're looking to expand the site in a very responsible manner, meeting all the regulations. And, you know, we've done our part to meet with, you know, local, you know, personnel. We have the professional that does the fire safety analysis. And, you know, this is a state-of-the-art facility that'll meet all these requirements. I mean, this, you know, if there's a fire or a catastrophic event, you know, anywhere, if it could be on the highway, if there was a, you know, car accident, someone's going to use the appropriate measures to, you know, mitigate risk. And, you know, that it's in the toolbox for, you know, a reason. And then there's a path that may follow. But we're trying to design a site that, you know, will prevent and eliminate these situations from, you know, occurring. And that's what we've been trying to relay through a lot of these really, you know, good questions, you know, about this site and how, you know, Wenzel Fuel here is looking to make an investment and really do this the, you know, right way. And I think the fact that they've operated here in town as a business for so many years with no incident has to speak to, you know, their business and certainly, you know, they're growing and they, you know, they want to do it in the right way. But we're here with the people to try to answer the questions and really address these, you know, these concerns. And as Attorney Swiniarski said, if there's something that we need to provide more information on, then certainly we can do so.
Can you, maybe Mr. Wenzel, can you speak to insurance coverage for remediation in the event there was some, you know, issue with oil or other substances?
I don't know the exact answer to that question from our insurance perspective, but they are very well aware of the business that we are in, and we are insured appropriately.
What's the number that means appropriately?
The amount of insurance.
The amount of insurance. Because it makes a difference.
I think that
because
could be defined by two different people separately. One person might feel that it's a zillion dollars, and one person might think it's not that.
So my question directly to you is exactly how much liability insurance are you planning to carry to cover this site?
I would have to have my insurance broker answer that question. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head.
Yeah, we can check into that. It's never quite that easy with insurance. So you have general liability, then you have specific liabilities. You frequently will have an umbrella policy that is triggered only if one other policy is exhausted and there is no other party with contributory negligence. I know that it's a good question if the answer was that easy, but it's not. The insurance world is pretty complicated, but we can do a little research and get back to you with a better answer.
Because I think one of the concerns that I have when they talk about, like, the possibilities of seepage or leakage, we're all on wells.
But so the...
So all of the people, all of the businesses that are there, all the people who live in this area, all have wells. So if there's any kind of spillage or any kind of leakage or anything that goes, you know, goes over a containment system, if you have, like, you have some containment systems, but if we have, like, some of these horrible storms that we have and the possibility that maybe some of that stuff would leak out into the environment, that has the potential to affect the wells of a lot of the people who live in this neighborhood.
Not to mention it's surrounded by wetlands.
Yes.
So you get to the point where there's two ways to mitigate the concern that you have. You can design to prevent the problem, or you can, as you're suggesting, have some kind of insurance coverage. For thousands, you know, for 100,000 gallons of oil seeping into the groundwater supply, I don't think there's insurance for that. That's not the way you mitigate that concern. That's why we have the DES regulation of how you store this. So there isn't insurance for everything, because there are some things that can't be fixed with dollars. So instead, you fix them by preventing the occurrence from happening. And that's what we're doing. The same goes with the foam. Like, to sort of assume that there's going to be contaminate. First of all, to assume that there's going to be an incident is, a one in a whatever, million, billion, whatever the number is. There hasn't been one here. It's not something that happens often, especially when these facilities are designed according to today's standards. So then the next step is, if something happens, and we keep bringing up Epping, although I think we've now explained how we're not Epping, that's not happening here, but if there's some sort of catastrophe, then the question is, well, what about the foam contaminating? Well, we told you we'll get back to you on the foam. It may not be a foam that contaminates, if in fact that one in a million or billion thing ever happens. So it's not a matter of saying, oh, your insurance policy is X amount of dollars, that's not enough to clean up the environment. There isn't money that can do that. That's not how environmental contamination works.
I just want to make a point that saying we don't know what the odds are of it happening and then saying it's a million, or one in a million or a billion, those are not equivalent, right? It's okay to say we don't know the odds. I'll accept that.
I'm just...
But I wouldn't want to conflate the record by talking about a million or a billion, right? One in a million, one in a billion chance. That's not necessarily going to help, right? It's not going to be more accurate.
My point is saying it's unknown.
So I would say that I've been in the designing oil facilities since 1989, and none of the scenarios that we're discussing have ever happened at any of my facilities that I've designed. So
thank you. That's good to hear.
And just speaking to, like, I just want to address some of these concerns too. And we haven't talked a lot about design specifics for this facility, but when we look at this site, this is really a huge improvement, an investment into this site. Meaning, we're going to be making, improvements to stormwater mitigation. We're going to be making improvements to, grading. We're going to make sure that, things are, handled, appropriately. So when you make comments, and it's a fair statement about, the site has some jurisdictional areas in its surrounding, we've noted that. We're going to make sure that stormwater from the site, and what that means is any runoff from the impervious areas is going to be conveyed and routed to appropriate areas, whether it's the containment, dike if you're under the canopy, or whether it's to stormwater management areas if it's just runoff from improved areas. Right now, none of that exists because this facility was built so long ago in a time where that wasn't a requirement. So we're actually going to be improving some of the wetland buffer areas, reestablishing those areas, in improving stormwater runoff and stormwater management, all through an appropriate process before the planning board, where those details are really, evaluated. But I want to touch on that, and that, we're not...
That's good to hear. I'm glad to hear that. Is that information, do you want to share that in some written form or something?
Sharing it for the record right now, that these are all improvements that we're planning on.
And if that's the list, that's great. I'm just saying, I would be happy to read that material if you wanted to provide it as such. If you just want to explain it, then that's fine too. I just want to make sure I understand everything you're saying.
That's not really our whole total issue. Really, the planning board has got a lot of work ahead of them here. This isn't ending tonight.
Right. But I want to understand if there's... Yeah. This is a new insight for me, that this will not only, will we have new tanks, but we're going to have a safer entire area, including the existing tanks. That's, to me, relevant. That's good news, right?
But that's all part of the site plan review process. So we have to, we're making a change on the property. So now we have, we're going to come under a review under your current ordinance, through that site plan review process. So we're planning on that because, frankly, we've done site plans here in town in the past, and we've worked with your town, review engineer and consultant who is very keen on, all of these types of requirements and improvements. So those are things, and I'm happy to, write a paragraph summarizing, but I just want to, there's been some statements made this evening that are talking about some of these surrounding features that we think we're really going to make some improvements.
Good to hear that.
And that, you know, that is sort of one of the things that happens a lot where, on the one hand, those are part of site plan review, but on the other hand, the concerns do impact the criteria that you're evaluating. And it you know, it can be difficult to sort of figure out. I mean, we try not to do site plan review at the ZBA because right. it is
that
within
was
the
my point. That
yeah,
two different things.
But on the other hand, the questions, of course, make sense because they are relevant to the criteria for variance that you're considering. So I think what we can do is give you sort of a summary, and then what I usually see, I mean, the decision is yours, is that it the ultimate decision on those things has to be left to the planning board because it is within their jurisdiction, but we can give you an idea of what we're doing, and it is always subject to what the planning board will require. You know, in my experience, it's pretty darn rare that we go to the planning board with a proposal and come out with an approval of that exact proposal. The site plan review process is usually a give and take with some changes and some suggestions
from
the planning board.
So, question. The plan that you provided and created was for the propane tanks. So how does that change now that propane tanks aren't there?
So the plan that we...
I was just going to say, the original plan that we proposed with the propane also had the same fuel facility on it. And so the only thing that has changed is we have removed anything related to propane from the property.
So you're going to do the same plan even though you have no propane?
Well, yes, we just removed
from a safety.
Yeah, and so when you look at the plan that we have in front of you, if you recall, you know, we had the propane, the bulk storage area back here, and then we had a, you know, an area for, you know, empty tanks, which I think you were referring to in the back as well. The reality is we still have to account for the traffic, the deliveries, the emergency response. So it's important to still have this, you know, this kind of flow through the site and still have the, you know, the paved area and the access around the existing containment, you know, area, which hasn't changed. And so because of the way this site was configured, we were able to just eliminate, you know, the propane features from the plan, and the remainder is the, you know, that containment, you know, dike with the three tanks in there, and then, you know, the associated site improvements around the perimeter. Such. Does that help?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I ask Bob Hanna, can I ask you, I want to go back to the pond because what are the recommendations for using a pond? How does that work? I know that we have a hydrant on the pond.
Yeah.
But is there any kind of screening to keep stuff in? What about winter when there's 3 feet of ice on the pond, which
well,
is
that's
not
one
useful
of,
water.
And the blog that was referenced was a summation of some of the other stuff I've read in under the NFPA. And I'm still researching it. It takes a long time. Under NFP 1142, where it discourages the use and planning and reliability of ponds, because over periods of time, anything from sediment as well as seasonal issues like drought and ice, we have no idea how deep an ice is going to get. So those are usually drought and when what was it 3 years ago, 4 years ago, we had a drought, and I can remember that pond was pretty low. So they kind of discourage that as a complete portion of the fire suppression supply.
Can I speak to that?
And that comes down to that decision actually is made by the authority. It's supposed to be made by the authority having jurisdiction. The question I would have is, what's the liability that authority takes in when it comes making that decision as that being a major water supply.
So are you saying that if the town relies on Dean assumption that there's enough water in the pond, and then it turns out that either we have a drought or there's the pond is, that water, a majority of that water is frozen, then the town bears liability?
That's an open question when you talk about, you know, the liabilities and the jurisdictions. It becomes a good or bad.
Okay.
You people should talk to your lawyer about that.
Yeah, so I just want to speak to, I mean, I've been designing.
What does that mean?
When you're talking about legal liability, your lawyer is the one to talk to about that.
So I would like to just speak to fire pond designs. I mean, I've been doing fire pond designs throughout the state. Fire pond designs are actually often preferred by volunteer fire departments because you don't have to fill them up. Now, without a doubt, there are standards and design criteria, and I can speak to that on larger, you know, on a larger level. So your site plan regulations mention that, you know, every site should have a 30,000, you know, gallon water supply on it. So your site plan regulations essentially state that you've addressed that, you know, there's a 30,000 gallon water supply need for fire suppression, mm-hmm. right? We met with the fire department and we talked about, you know, what we're proposing and what's nearby. They've agreed that what we're offering and your regulations allow for that mm-hmm. as well. And so we've addressed your regulations through an agreement with, you know, the fire department. Now, with that said, we don't take safety lightly. As a professional engineer, safety is one of the most, you know, important things that we design for. And so the NFPA accepts fire ponds for fire suppression. They may discourage it because, you know, there are circumstances where people try to propose fire ponds in poor locations. That's why the NFPA standards for fire ponds are not 30,000 gallons. It's actually 50,000 gallons, okay? So the reason why it's 50,000 gallons is because you're not supposed to count the top 2 feet and bottom 2 feet of a pond. And so what they're looking for is an effective 30,000 gallons mm-hmm. of water supply. That pond across the road has about 900,000 gallons in it, right? Based on quick calculations with very conservative assumptions and talk. So let's put that in perspective. There is a huge buffer in supply in that pond. Now, every fire pond does have a maintenance component. You should, right. you know, blow out the dry hydrant and, you know, make sure there's no sediment issues. But so does in the fire cistern. You know, there's always, you have to fill it. Or so you got to make sure there's water in there after you've used it. And, you know, so often my experience has been that, you know, volunteer fire departments like fire ponds when they're successful. This pond, it's my understanding, has existed for a long time and has likely proven that it's a successful water source over a period of time. And without a doubt, with that volume, the NFPA would support, you know, a fire pond of that size, in my professional opinion, because of the fact that we're not experimenting with a fire pond here. We have a known supply that has very adequate, you know, capacity.
Can I just ask our fire chief, because I think we can clear it up pretty quick. Would you agree that we have an adequate supply of water for any eventuality?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's all I really need to know. Good. And if there was ice, we could get through it or.
Well, that's what the hydrants.
That's what the hydrants.
Yeah, yeah. You're pulling from the bottom.
I just like to ask, probably 75-80% of the towns in this country rely on ponds.
Yeah.
There are very few domestic.
Yeah. Water. I think the key point is there's adequate water.
Right, and we've looked at
our,
that. I mean,
our
so
fire chief feels that way, right? So, yeah. And you can get to it. You got the cistern. Does the cistern not freeze? Is that? It's large enough.
Yeah, typically it's below the freeze line, so
gotcha.
It doesn't freeze.
Gotcha. Okay, gotcha.
I got a question for Dean. We've got this cistern down here. Would it make any sense, and I don't see it on here, to when they're building this road, to put a 4 or 6 inch line from this cistern to where this area opens up?
That is
so that you don't have to have pull more than one truck down in there?
Well, that's what that monitor
is. That is proposed.
It is.
Yeah, that's what the monitor
I just want to make sure I use the right terminology. I'm sorry. So the monitor nozzle, what that is there's a pipe. Great question. There's a pipe right from the cistern that goes to that monitor nozzle, which will be internal, you know, so that it's facing.
I mean, it just seems to me it makes a lot of sense to be able to run 4-inch line from here to there and not even have to have tanker shovel.
Well, that would be what we'd do.
Yeah.
You'd call it tankers originally because you need to get it going.
Right. Oh, I understand all that. I just thought, you know, it would make sense to me to have a line in while you're digging that up anyway. It's not that expensive. And it buys you a lot of.
So, Ron, are you talking about a line that goes from the pond to the cistern?
No. From the cistern, the length of the road to where it opens up down here, wherever.
Oh, so that they would connect there?
So they would dump into or connect into the cistern and then pump from there through. So you don't have to bring tanker shuttle way down into here.
It's more efficient.
And it means that line is laid already. You don't have to.
And it's safer.
Yeah, and that is part of the agreement, actually, with the fire department we've agreed to.
Mrs. Pender, you've had your hand up several times. I have.
I would like to just change this conversation for a minute, and I don't want to be sarcastic, but I don't hear any discussion about the actual zoning. This project that Mr. Wenzel wants to do does not adhere to the zoning. And I want to talk about that. The fact that the citizens of this community voted for zoning. And they expect or hope that your committee will uphold that zoning. Mr. Wenzel has a whole lot of protection here tonight. He has his experts, he has his attorney, all speaking about a project that has some amount of hazard involved. We have no one here speaking about the taxpayers who live here who voted for this zoning. And yet you're considering diverting from the zoning. So I'd like to have a little conversation about that. Does this adhere to the zoning?
That's exactly what we are trying to make findings of fact to
I think
to determine.
It does
That's
not
exactly
adhere.
The question.
It does
that
not
we have
adhere
to
the
understand.
Zoning. It does not adhere to the zoning.
Whether there's a variance that's been granted and should
so Mr. Wenzel is asking you to make an exemption.
Correct.
Do you make exemptions here? Is that what you're trying
to say? Well, this is not a special exception. This is a variance. It's different.
Correct.
So
does this qualify for a variance?
That's what we're trying to determine. That's exactly the point of the conversation.
So who is here to speak for the taxpayers who want to say that we expect you to adhere to the zoning? I don't think this qualifies for an exemption.
Well, this area, this proposal is not a pre-existing non-conforming use. This proposal is here because of a variance that was granted in 1992. So it is a non-conforming use.
And in 1992, as I recall, the exemption was made for financial reasons. I think that's what the notes from that meeting claim, that the zoning board at the time thought that they would grant the exception because the owner at the time needed the money. That doesn't apply anymore.
It didn't apply then either. Well, the original request for a variance was denied in November 1991, and it was denied for the reasons that normally a variance is denied for, that there was no hardship, there was concern about, there were two separate things going on the property at the time, and that this would add a third use to this property. They said there was no hardship, that and the land could be used for what it was intended. Our zoning does not ban this kind of use. we welcome this use in certain zones, but this is definitely not one of the zones where this use is allowed. The variance was the owner.
And Madam Chairman, you're tripling the volume from the exemption that was made 30 years ago.
That's...
Here we are 30 years later, and Mr. Wenzel has the right to come in here and ask for anything he wants to ask for. But my point is, this doesn't meet the zoning. It doesn't. And you have to consider the taxpayers and what they voted for. And if they don't like this zoning, we can vote to change it. But currently, this is not allowed. Mr. Keenan, you're smiling.
And you're agreeing.
I, as a taxpayer and a citizen, I am very aware of that as I sit here. I know that what we have to decide impacts this town and for a long time to come, one way or the other.
Exactly.
And so I want to make sure that that decision is done with as much knowledge as possible and balancing the criteria that under which zoning variances are granted and determining if it meets those criteria. So
I think it would be reasonable to say that you need to consider the repercussions if you grant this variance.
That is exactly the line of my questioning this evening and every other time I've sat here.
Thinking
on this
about
subject.
The lawsuit that we had last year.
I think about the human life. I think about property. I think about the kids in Moore School. I think about the library. I think about this town hall. That's exactly what I've been asking and trying to understand.
For me, it comes down to the fact that this does not meet the zoning regulations, period.
That is not, in my mind, been decided yet. That's what we're trying to find out.
But clearly it doesn't.
Before I let you speak, I just wanted to read this. These are the reasons why the board... granted, this is the decision in the case. The board discussed the authority to grant a use variance and noted that legal advice is to do so only under extremely extenuating circumstances. The board noted, these are their extremely extenuating circumstances, that the property would be well screened from the road, that it would not require parking, and would provide additional income to the applicant.
You're talking about the old one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the reason you're here is because you want to expand on this particular variance that was granted 32 years ago. This is an expansion of this variance.
Well, the way your ordinance reads is expansion of a non-conforming use.
Yes. It was a non-conforming use, but these are the reasons that the variance was granted. It was originally denied for the reasons it was originally denied because the property can be used for other uses which were allowed in this zone. No hardship was shown. There is concern with additional use on a small lot which is already used as a residential site and for an industrial operation, and there is a concern that subdivision may be necessary in order to lease a portion of the lot for the site of the proposed use. And the only thing that changed between when Fletcher asked for the variance the first time and the second time was that Fletcher was going to lease the land to Viking and they were going to put their tanks on it. And when he came back, he changed it. He was going to own the tanks. He was going to lease the tanks to Viking. And so then they granted the variance for those conditions. They, even though it said they discussed the authority to grant a use variance and noted that legal advice is to do so only under extremely extenuating circumstances, and these are their circumstances, that the use would be well screened from the road and would not require additional parking spaces and would provide additional income to the appellant, and that the status of the business is not relevant to the case. And so those are the reasons the variance was granted. And so that's why we're here today, because that variance was granted in 1992.
Are these extreme circumstances?
Excuse me? There was a gentleman in the back who wishes to speak. Would you like to state your name and...
Art Goslin. I guess probably, I've been in town since 81. And so I'm aware of the votings and such that go on. And I know that for protection of the town, it was more of a case of being in the center of town, that although I was only on North Road and since moved to the corner here, I was very much involved with CY and such that I was very much protective of the town, and that it should be broken up into different districts. And so I know I voted for what Carl was talking about. So I can assure you that there are a lot of people who are very concerned about the way the town is broken up properly, so that you don't have an overpopulated area that people can be affected, especially with wells. And, you know, I'll go and say again to you, Jeff, I wish you all everything in the world. It's just a bad location. And you know what? I appreciate you're making every effort to go and try to say we'll stand down the LP tanks. And there again, I do appreciate it. At the same time, it was never something that should have been allowed in the first place. And the fact that whoever was in power at the time actually allowed it to happen is just sad. But as somebody makes a mistake, should we just live up to their mistake and say, oh, well, you know, think about, you're talking about fuel seeps in the ground in Effing. Okay, that was Effing. These guys can build whatever they want to. And you know what? I'm sure these guys are really good at what they do. But isn't in the properly placed area? That's the thing, guys. It's not in a properly placed area. Jeff is inheriting something from Viking. And God, I want him to, you know, to have something. Personally, I see Palmer, yes, I see Buxton, all by the highway. I see a gentleman down here, I know, Jeff, we already said, it's not your properties, whatever. But, you know, couldn't we just use our minds for a different way about this instead of worrying about fuel suppression and all this money that's being put into it? All of this.
Yeah.
That is actually on the being bottom. Put in place of let's go and try to comfort everybody, giving them their pacifier and saying, we'll take care of you. Don't worry. We'll take care of you. And what if it doesn't? But why put it in a populated area? This town has made efforts a few times, and I've been to those meetings, to try to have the center of town. And it's not because I'm on the corner over here. I don't care. I'd like to get my whole business right out of there good and put it in another area myself. Because you know what? I'd rather see this much more residential and something that's better for the population, personally. But storing fuel is not something I do. I work with Jeff. I work with this fuel, and I appreciate it. And I'll say that. I just wish we could put this in a different location and somebody would open up to Jeff and give him a chance to be able to have a brand new facility that's very safe and away from the population. That's really what it is. It has nothing to do with all this fire suppression and all this, you know, years of experience, you know? You know, I've been working with this fuel since 1977. Does that make me better than anybody else? No. It just means I work with the fuel and I know how deadly it is. And to have that possibly get in the groundwater, in and around these people that are going to live around it, I wouldn't want it. Not my area. Anybody who lives away from here, another part of town, they probably wouldn't care because their water's safe. Okay? Their area is safe. They don't have to worry about it. The people in this immediate area, yeah, it's their worry. It is their worry. And to go and actually go and suggest we go and turn tail and just go and say, it's okay to do this? What are we voting for? Carl is absolutely right. We're actually giving pause to this, which is astounding to me. And Jeff, I wish you could work with Craig and buy that and get that place down there where the trailers are. I wish you could be in there. You'd be so high, but you know, high as far as seeing people would be able to see you. I don't mean high as a kite, okay? And I don't mean smirking. And I'm not high as a kite, but I do love the town. And I just wish we could try to find another way. But, you know, you guys are going to do what you got to do. But Carl's right. It was never voted that way. So it shouldn't be that way. And the fact we're even talking about it is just a statement, a slap in the face to anybody votes.
It seems to me that no one is considering the rights of the voters here. And that's your job. They, you know, we voted for zoning. We expect the zoning to be upheld. And we spent an hour talking about potential hazard. We shouldn't even be considering something that has potential hazard. We shouldn't even be talking about the pond and the foam and all of that. If it's a hazard, it's a hazard. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay, Mrs. Eddie, is there anybody else from there, any other abutters or people in the community who wish to speak?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, sir, would you state your name, spell your last name, and tell us where you live?
Darryl Ritchie, R-I-T-C-H-I-E, 43 Deerfield Road. And listening to this tonight, I'm not even sure where to start. I don't even know where to start. I said what I said the first time when you came, Jeff. You took the propane out. Now you want to bring oil in. And I'm listening to everybody, and I'm like, I just don't even know. I don't even know where to start. This makes no sense. You have fire suppression. You told me when we walked the property you didn't have fire suppression. Now you're saying you have fire suppression. This makes no sense. Everybody needs to gather up and get their head together and figure this out. Because everybody's contradicting each other. I don't even know where to start. I'm at a loss of words. If we can start this meeting over with what he said, your attorney, Jeff, that the only problem in the beginning with the abutters, with the propane, was trees and lighting. If I'm wrong, correct me. And that's not what the case was. So I don't even know. This is just going from here to here to a big plane crash. This is just a big plane crash. You guys got to figure it out. Somebody's got to figure it out. As I said in the beginning, no offense to Jeff. I don't want this in my backyard. It's in my backyard. It's more in their backyard, Kim and Ray Marino, than it is my backyard. I'm diagonal to Jeff's property, but he's in my backyard. So I'm going to have to deal with this. But nobody else in town is going to have to deal with it. So you guys got to figure it out. That's all I have to say. I can go on all night. I can be like Art. Go on all night. You know, I feel for you.
Thanks.
I do. I feel for you. You guys got to figure this out.
I speak too much. I'm sorry.
You got to figure it out. You do. Because I have a headache. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, sir. Sir, would you identify yourself, spell your last name,
right,
please? And
I'll do my best, Darryl.
Deerfield Road.
Tough crowd. Ray Marino, 39 Deerfield Road. Last name is Marineau. So, a bunch of confusing information, right? So you guys are talking about your delivery trucks. For me, you know, looking at this, sitting on an apron, and then somebody said that if a delivery truck leaks, it's going to go into the containment. So my thought is if it leaks, starts a fire, oil runs into a containment, okay, that's a whole other set of problems. Oh, what else? Increased traffic? I think there is. I mean, you can't be investing money like this without having more delivery trucks. I mean, it's just business. And then The other one is more increased traffic is that 40 by 70 foot proposed warehouse. I mean, so you're going to have either service vehicles in there, you're going to have possibly delivery vehicles. I mean, it's a warehouse. So something's going in, something's coming out, something's being stored. And then kind of back to what Art said also is, if we've got rules in town, these zoning rules, why aren't we following them? I mean, the town voted on them. So if this project doesn't fall within those guidelines, then the town needs to go back and adjust it if they choose to. If not, then it's kind of a just stamped deal, done. But, you know, I mean, another point for me is, I've got a well 265 feet from that, from my property line to yours. So I'm going to be the first one to get hit with that if something happens, right? But it is Murphy's Law. So, I mean, I'm going to be the first one affected, if not your property that sits right out on the front there. So there's just got to be a better location. And it just sounds like this was just some old town deal back in the day that was done. And, you know, handshake, a wink, a nod, whatever.
That's right.
So, I mean, why do we keep putting that into it? I think it just needs to be done.
Is there anybody else in the audience that...
I got more. Sarah Ritchie, R-I-T-C-H-I-E, 43 Deerfield Road. You talked about adjusting the wetlands. Somebody.
He spoke on the wetland buffer.
Correct. What are you going to do to the wetland buffer, and where's it going to go, and how's it going to flow, and what's the plan with all that? I haven't seen those plans yet.
That will all go with planning board. The design and planning board review for site plan review.
So where do you plan on sending all that water out into the backyard of your property?
I mean, we spoke to that. Madam Chair, do you mind if I address that
to
you?
No, please do, sir.
So, you know, part of the site design will have to meet current site plan and drainage standards, which means we're going to capture, convey, treat, and what I mean by treat is, you know, we'll have quantitative and qualitative mitigation in the stormwater management area that would likely be, you know, just off the edge of the, you know, that paved surface shown on the plan. What I talked about is actually making improvements to the existing buffer area. Right now, you can see by looking at the plan where the existing limited clearing lines are with the existing gravel areas, and essentially, all of our improvements are lying inside an area that's impacted, and so we'll be able to restore buffer areas and make improvements. We're not going to be having, you know, detrimental impacts to jurisdictional wetland areas as a result of this project. It will be improvements over what currently exists, and so that's what I was speaking to. Those details, I mean, I can articulate, you know, the improvements that we're going to be doing, but you don't typically design a site to its full capacity until, you know, you get to a planning board stage. But we can certainly speak to what the criteria is going to be and what we anticipate the review process to be like, you know, because we have worked, you know, through the site plan process and with the town's consultant on a number of, you know, sites, not only in this community, but also in surrounding communities. So we know, you know, the improvements that we're going to be negotiating, but they're going to fall within the existed impacted area within that existing tree line, and so hopefully that addresses, you know, that question. But just want to speak clearly, we're not looking to further alter the buffer areas or impact, you know, those wetland areas. We might make some improvements to the width of the access road, you know, coming in to meet, you know, emergency response standards and current requirements, but that's really the only area that we'd be looking at making any width improvements. And it would be within the existing, you know, clearing areas, but, you know, would be slightly wider coming in to the facility.
Yes, sir.
I'm not talking about what you have coming into the road. I'm talking about the backyard of the property. On the backyard of the property, on the map, you have a debris pile, but this part is going to be part of your wetlands.
And I was talking about the whole site that we're not going to have.
So that debris pile is going to be in the back on my property. What's that going to consist of, and where's that going to go?
So again, that would be an area that we would likely, so there's a debris pile here.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably in that's actually inside the wooded area.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't come up with design plans on or even evaluated whether that needs to be mitigated. It could be, could be already significantly vegetated through there. It's there now, yeah.
I think what he's talking about is that those are issues that would be discussed in the planning process in through the planning board. That
where's this runoff going to go?
Yeah. If it gets approved here, we'll go there.
And what's the debris pile?
It's an existing pile. It's there now.
Yeah.
All right.
It's
not on someone else's property.
No. There's some issues that I've read through the safety data sheets that you supplied to the board. And these are the sheets for fuel oil and for diesel fuel. And just some of the issues that I saw were large fires, foam, carbon dioxide, or dry chemical. Water may be ineffective for fighting the fire, but may be used to cool fire-exposed containers. Major fires may require withdrawal, allowing the tank to burn. Large storage tank fires typically requires specifically trained personnel and equipment to extinguish the fire, often including the need for properly applied firefighting foam. Firefighting activities that may result in potential exposure to high heat, smoke, or toxic byproducts of combustibles should require NIOSH-approved pressure demand self-contained breathing apparatus with full face piece and protective clothing. Due to the high vapor density, flammable toxic vapors may be present in low-lying areas, dikes, pits, drains, or trenches. Vapors may accumulate in low-lying areas and reach ignitable concentrations. Ventilate the area. Use of non-sparking tools in intrinsically safe equipment is recommended. Potential for flammable atmosphere should be monitored using a combustible gas indicator positioned downward of the spill area. Spills may infiltrate subsurface soil and groundwater. Professional assistance may be necessary to determine the extent of subsurface impact. It's toxic to aquatic life. Response and cleanup crews must be properly trained and must utilize proper equipment. Empty product containers or vessels contain flammable vapors. And they talked about using pressure-positive air-supplied respirators, that there's a potential for controlled release. Exposure levels are not known in oxygen-deficient atmospheres or any other circumstances where air-purifying respirator may not provide adequate protection. And then when you go to the a lot of the things, there was stuff in here about that it was not, there was no, that it's carcinogenic to animals, but there's no record that it's carcinogenic to humans. This is about diesel fuel. Contact with the eyes and face may cause irritation. Long-term exposure may cause dermatitis. Inhalation may cause irritation. Significance of long-term exposure could cause respiratory insufficiency and pulmonary edema. Firefighting measures, foam, carbon dioxide, dry chemicals are most suitable. Water may be ineffective for fighting the fire. The product is flammable, easily ignited when exposed to heat, spark, open flame, or other source of ignition. Flowing product may be ignited by self-generated static electricity. When mixed with air and exposed to an ignition source, flammable vapors can burn in the open or explode in confined spaces. Being heavier than air, vapors may travel long distances to an ignition source and flashback. Runoff to sewer may cause fire or explosion hazard. There's several more pages. Major fires may require withdrawal, allowing the tank to burn. So from everything that I've read, it's not all the stuff that you've done and all the stuff that you've done. It's human error. Somebody does something wrong. Somebody didn't notice the truck. Somebody didn't notice this. There were situations with the propane where somebody drilled into an underground pipe accidentally, didn't realize. So it's the kind of thing where, Bill, you're talking about, you know, you want to be sure. You can't be sure because people make mistakes. People are tired. People make mistakes. So I think that's, you know, as much as you're doing the very best that you can to make the safest operation you can, the operation is in the most compact part of our community. So I think that that's something for our board to think about, that it's not only our firehouse and our school, it's you have a new business that came into town that's next to your property, and I understand that they have quite valuable antiques, and I know he specializes in clocks, and his clocks sell for quite large amounts of money, some of his clocks. So, and he has this stuff stored on his property. You have our
school.
No, I'm going the other direction. The courthouse and the post office and CYAA. So there's a lot of, this is the most compact part of our community. So I think when the people are talking, maybe they're concerned about those kind of issues too. So, Mr. Kavanaugh?
Kevin Coughlin.
Coughlin, I'm sorry.
I'm frustrated just listening.
Thank you.
I'm not on your side.
No.
There's already almost 30,000 gallons sitting there for 30 more years. Ever had a problem? Ever had a spill? Talking about coming in and improving the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. It's like you're talking about it like it's uranium, right? Almost everybody has a tank in their home that they pay somebody to pour that stuff into their house, right? You're saying how deadly it is. Yep, you drink it, you bathe in it, it's bad, right? The chance of it blowing up is zero. There's going to be 30,000 gallons there no matter what you do, right? It's not going away. He's investing heavily to try to expand a business, small businessman, which we really like to have. He owns the property. He already has infrastructure there, which he's trying to spend a huge amount of money to improve. But we're talking about it like it's uranium that's going to kill everybody. And that's a lie. And it's frustrating to hear. I understand nobody wants it in their backyard. I get it. It's already in your backyard. Right? It is. It's not going to go away. That's all I had to say.
You know what's going to be in my backyard? Look up. What do you see right there?
A light.
So add.
Is there currently light there?
No.
No.
Okay.
So now take that property, take those tanks, and abut them to my property,
right,
and not all these lights, because you're going to have to have light.
Like,
so when you're sitting in your backyard,
this is not the conversation for the
time. You need to address your comments to the chair. I have a question for Mr. Wenzel. Those tanks that are currently there are 32 years old. What are your plans for those tanks? I mean, do you have any plan to replace them? What about the piping? Are you planning to upgrade any of it?
We do not have an intention to upgrade the existing facility, but I can say that the tanks do undergo regular testing as required by New Hampshire DES. So from a safety perspective, they are monitored. We have to empty them out, clean the bottoms. They come in, do ultrasonic tests, and ensure that they are safe to continue for operation. And we just had an inspection in the fall. We're okay to continue operation for the next period of time. So that we undergo a very serious amount of regulation, and we will continue to uphold, you know, the level of which everyone would expect us to.
And I don't know if this is a purview for our board or if this is a purview for the planning board, but I'm wondering what kind of plans. I know that when we've had towers and approved towers on the site, that we have also had bonds for decommissioning of the towers. And you think about the changes that are taking place technologically, solar panels, they're working on, you know, fusion, nuclear fusion and things, different ways to provide sources of heat, so that in the time, if you think 30 years in the future from now, and people are no longer using, it's like nobody uses coal anymore, or very few people.
Because they aren't allowed to.
Very few people use coal. So, and maybe at a time that they'll ban the oil. So, do we think about having some kind of a bond for the cleanup of this site, and so that the tanks, so the town isn't left with the cleanup of anything that's left on that site, or the federal government, or whoever takes care of that. I mean, I'm not sure if that's a planning board or a...
But you know, we're getting way beyond where we need to be here.
Right. Well, no, I mean, the reason I bring it up is because I know that we've done it with towers.
I know.
And
yeah.
And that we've required towers too. So it's just a thought. So.
Yeah, I mean...
I could offer you a little clarification on that.
Okay.
I'm in one of maybe six lawyers in New England who did most of the towers around. So when you're talking about towers, the tower owner is never the landowner. And the removal of the tower, there were a lot of abandoned towers back in the 1990s before the Telecommunications Act of 1996 that were just put up without much thought. The difference here is that these are actually assets being constructed on the property with value, whereas a tower actually has no value. The antennas on the tower are the things with the value. So while it makes sense in a way to think, oh, well, someone should pay for the removal, it's kind of the same thing as if someone builds a building. You wouldn't require a bond for the removal of that, because that is an improvement that is actually part of the land. It's not a separate entity from the landowner that is coming in and proposing the tanks. Being said, you know, that is usually an issue that comes up at the planning board when you're talking about towers. I think it's odd in a situation like this where, again, it's an actual improvement, and I don't say improvement in the common sense. I say in the legal sense, just like a house is an improvement, a building is an improvement to land. It is part of the land. It's not contemplated to be removed, just like you don't contemplate removing a house. At some point, it would be rebuilt when it's obsolete or someone wants to do something different. But it's not something where... you know, towers, for example, are usually a 20-year lease with up to 20 more years as an option, and then it's gone. That's not the case with this. While there may be some day that it's obsolete, that is an issue for the landowner.
The only thing is, I really don't think an oil tank and a house are analogous. I mean, you can live in that house. You can't live in the oil. The only thing that oil tank is good for is for storing oil.
It's worth a lot more than a house.
They're not analogous.
No, I'm saying,
but
in
I
the
mean,
sense
you're,
of it
you're
being
saying
an improvement,
that it's,
improvement
it's an improvement, but it's not, but it truly is not analogous. A house is
analogous. I'm not saying it's analogous in the sense that the use is the same. I'm saying that it's something that is installed and becomes legally part of the land. It's not separate from the land anymore, whereas a tower always is. Towers literally held in by 12 bolts. Real big bolts.
I'm not sure how this relates to...
But...
Yeah. So, probably, so we need to just get... Let's get back to whatever.
If I could have a, a response to a lot of the public comments, it may be very helpful, unless there are still more coming.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak? Any of the abutters or anyone else in the audience who wishes to speak?
I think we reserve the right to speak after the attorney has something to say about what we've said.
Oh, absolutely. Okay.
I mean, that's fair. That's usually how these go. So when we talk about the zoning and that it's not permitted under zoning, that is true. It's not a permitted use under your zoning ordinance. That is not the end of whether or not something can be built under our law in the state of New Hampshire and in every other state. The second mechanism, and there can be others in certain circumstances, is a variance, as this board knows. So when you say the zoning doesn't allow it, therefore you can't build it, well, no, that there'd be no need for zoning boards if that was the case. The zoning ordinance is one step, and then there's, as this board knows, and I'm saying this more for the benefit of the people who spoke, because I know this board knows its job, that there are five criteria under state law. It's RSA 674:33, as I recall, but I'm not that great with numbers. Now, what you're evaluating there, however, is not oil storage versus no oil storage, as Mr. Kavanaugh was touching upon from a common sense perspective. From a legal perspective, we're talking about a variance for expansion of a non-conforming use. That's the variance that the board directed me to apply for. So when you evaluate that, all of those criteria are evaluated against whether the expansion creates some new risk that is not there now. And that's a very important distinction, because we're talking about a variance for an expansion of use. So you, like, as Mr. Kavanaugh pointed out, you do have a facility there right now. And the other thing to point out from a legal perspective, you've raised concerns, sure. And I think we've addressed those concerns very well. However, you do allow this use in certain parts of the town. So the question becomes, are those concerns not a concern where this is a permitted use and never has to come to the zoning board? I understand that this is the more densely populated part of the town, but still this use is allowed in other parts of town. So if it's allowed, are all these things that we've raised not concerns to those parts of town? Because that's the only logical conclusion, if it's allowed in one place and not the other, unless there's some link between the density. The discussion about wells is one that's hard to fathom. Again, regulated by the state, not the town, but also, you know, groundwater travels. If anyone was involved in any of the PFOA issues that came out of Merrimack, like myself, plenty of sites many, many miles away were contaminated by that. So if you're saying that your actual concern is contamination from a spill here, but you don't have that concern where this is permitted in town, you're making an assumption somehow that that groundwater doesn't travel here. And you can't make that assumption because it does. Or it travels somewhere else. I don't know the direction the groundwater travels. So again, all valid concerns, and that's why we are addressing them with mitigation in the design and the operation. It's not really plausible or reasonable to address those concerns by saying, no way, can't have it, because you can have it somewhere else. So the question becomes, what's the difference between there and here? And many of those concerns you raised, I think it's going to be very hard to articulate how there's a difference versus where it's allowed and where it's not allowed.
So basically you're saying zoning doesn't make sense then?
No, I didn't say that at all. I'm a big fan of zoning. It's what I do for a living. Sit on every board I live in.
I think the difference is the people decided what the difference was. The people decided. They decided that we'll let you do it over here, but we won't let you do it over here. Now, that the reasoning behind all of that can change over the years, as the density can change over the years. But back to the risk, The risk isn't going to be triple what it is now. It's not the same risk. It's three times as great.
You know, I would,
if that's the final,
agree with you to a point, but it's three times as great because it's three times as much oil.
Exactly.
But they've vastly improved the controls of everything that's there.
True.
So I'm not sure that that's a fair statement.
The reason this exemption was given in the first place would not be the reason that this board would agree to an exemption.
Absolutely. I'm sure that's
so to fall back and say that this board has to make an exception because of an exception that was made 30 years ago isn't logical because the reasoning was totally different.
Well, that's not what we're saying, but we are following the law that everybody voted on, that this requires that the expansion of a non-conforming use requires a variance. That's what we're applying for. That's the law in Candia.
And the criteria for the variance, do you meet all of the criteria?
Well,
that's up to this board.
The question they have to answer.
Well, I was being snide.
It's not your only job, but I don't know. I'd venture to say it's most of what you do. It's not only variances, but I sit on zoning boards. That's the largest part of what a zoning board does.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
I think I want to address the concept of, are we tripling the risk? First of all, if you only had one chair in this room and you tripled it, you still wouldn't have enough chairs. So even though we're tripling, I designed bulk oil storage facilities for a living, and his two tens and a five and a four is small relative to a lot of oil facilities. This whole project really is about one thing. It's so that he doesn't have to schedule transport trucks at 2 o'clock in the morning and then another one at six in the morning. What risk is ultimately going to be mitigated because the planning board is going to take the civil engineer to task to make sure that that site has things that it doesn't have now. Right now, you have nothing. You just got oil. If oil is going in and out of there at 10 gallons a minute or whatever the net flow is, that's not changing. That's not going to change. But what you're getting is you're going to get paved surfaces. You're going to get protection for spills. You're going to get rid of that junkyard that's there, and the canopy that's over that'll be over these tanks does not look bad. It looks just like the top of a garage for the most part. And so I think that we can't lose sight of the fact that he's spending a lot of money on eliminating risk that is there now, just so he can bring trucks in at a decent hour.
But he also did say, or someone said, that they need to have these tanks because of increased demand. So increased demand is...
That wasn't said.
No, I think the reality is, and I'll let Mr. Wenzel speak to this, in more detail, but the reality, he has an existing facility. The number of deliveries for the supply truck will increase to address the demand. So you'll get more deliveries more frequently to address the demand seasonally when you have 29,000 gallons of storage. Whereas if you have more storage available, you're going to get those deliveries, but it gives him a buffer to run his business. So those deliveries will happen, during normal business hours or as they're more convenient, and they'll be able to deliver a full truckload. Whereas right now, he likely has to schedule those deliveries at very critical times, and so that he can supply to the customers. So the demand, the business is always going to run here, and the business may grow here, to meet the demand. But you're going to, this facility requires more deliveries because of the amount of people and because of the growing, demand. So in allowing him to grow responsibly allows the business to operate more routinely during normal, you know, conditions with appropriate buffers, and frankly allows him to improve. And I agree 100% with what Mr. Coluccio was saying, allows there to be a lot of investment in updating the facility, which really the community in large part should embrace. If concerns are related to lighting and impacts or buffering, those are planning board items that, you know, we would address, you know, with a photometric lighting design and, you know, ensuring that there's no light pollution when we get to that stage. But what we're talking about is it's an existing business. In order for him to be in business, be able to service his clients and be able to grow, it's been 30 years. I mean, there is a need for the tank capacity to grow for him to better manage his business.
So, and so you just said it, in order for him to grow, which means more deliveries, which means more trucks.
He's already growing. That's why there's more deliveries happening more frequently.
I can sum that up in two sentences to make it real easy to understand.
No, I understand. I don't need two sentences.
So, okay.
I mean, he said... The thing is to say that the truck traffic is going to stay the same or be less doesn't maybe the big trucks, you're not going to see as many of those huge tankers, but what you are going to see is more of his delivery trucks coming and going because he's going to have more customers. Because he's growing. The business is growing. And so that means more customers and more deliveries. So the basic thing is you are going to have more trucks going in and out of that site.
That's not what we're saying. What I was trying to summarize, so we're proposing 99,000 gallons total. That site is going to use 99,000 gallons in a given time frame. With or without this facility. When you, is that clear? Like, that's the demand right now, you know, and I don't know how long that demand lasts. The question becomes, is it better to have this new facility to move those 99,000 gallons through the facility or to force it to go through the old facility? That's the two-sentence summary. That's really what it boils down to. The new facility will have a lot of that infrastructure investment that we've been talking about. The old facility is what it is as permitted in the 1990s.
And I would just say his business is going to grow because of his sales force, not because he has more tanks. If he gets a phone call from a customer wanting to get oil from him, he's not going to say no. He's going to take it on.
I think
then,
the point's clear.
Then he's, you know, that nice. 7 to 10 confusing times going to go from 7 to 12. You know, he's going to grow, but that's based on his sales force and his performance, not based on how many, nobody goes to a customer, nobody chooses their oil company because of the beautiful tanks they have. In fact, they have no idea.
Yeah, I got it. All right, is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to speak or have anything to say? Anybody on the board have anything else to say?
I think we've hashed this out about as much as we can.
I agree.
I really do.
I spoke with council. Council advised that we close the hearing and continue the meeting till next month. Develop a list of findings of fact. One person develop a list of findings of fact that at the next meeting the board discusses the findings of fact and comes to a decision rather than try to go through this tonight and remember everything. And that's a decision of the board.
And is there anything you wanted more information from us on?
I'm fine. I don't know. Is there anything else you need, Tony? Any other information?
There was discussion
today
about the phone.
Yeah,
I got a long list here.
From our standpoint, I agree with you, and you probably have some thoughts too. But on the other hand, how much longer can we keep pushing you folks out?
Well, it's not about that. It's about making sure that we do everything.
I agree. I just.
Yeah, and I know we'd like to. We would like to, but I think it's important to have all the get all the findings of fact and.
Who provides the findings of fact?
Someone on the board will do it. Usually, it's the chair that does it. And then we discuss. Brief. And then the next meeting, we'll all have a copy of the findings of fact, and then we get to discuss them, add to them, strike them. But it's a meeting; it is not a hearing. So that means there's no more input from the audience, from abutters, or anyone, from the applicants. This is a meeting of the board where we will discuss the findings, and then we will come to a decision.
You're saying the whole board would meet in basically a non-public?
No, then I'm
confused.
No, the board, at our next meeting, this board will meet. We will discuss the findings of fact. It is a meeting to finish.
In a public meeting.
It is a public meeting, but it is not a hearing. This is the difference between a meeting and a hearing. This is a hearing. The public is invited to participate in a meeting. The board discusses information that they have before it and comes to a conclusion without input from the audience or the applicant or anyone. So the applicant will provide no more information to us. It'll just be us. Going through having the minutes, I'll go through the minutes and come up with all the facts that we can find, and then we weigh the facts and against the five criteria of the for a variance, and see if it meets all the criteria for a variance.
Okay, I think somebody besides just you.
It can't be that way.
It can't.
No. One person
we'll
has to do it.
To
you'll all have it. You'll get a
edit,
list
add,
and then
or modify.
After we'll all go at the meeting, everyone will have the same list. And then we can read through the list and add, change, modify anything, and then use the facts that we have all agreed upon. To then use those to go through the five variance criteria.
Now then we would vote on this at the next meeting?
Yes, it will be
and
over.
And give them an answer one way
yes.
or the other.
Yes.
I'd like to request that those proposed findings be part of the public records request that I've made that hasn't been fulfilled yet when they're generated and circulated to the board.
They won't be circulated. My understanding is that they don't get circulated to the board until the meeting. That's my understanding of how. That's what I understand from our attorney, is that one person does it. It's not the way it's supposed to go. Is one person does it? It's not supposed to be because then that would be an illegal meeting.
I wasn't suggesting discuss them, but okay. I thought you had said that you'll get a list, but I didn't understand you were saying you'll get a list at the meeting. That's fine. We'll take the list at the meeting.
Yes, and you will also receive a list at the meeting, and then it will be a meeting, so this board will discuss all the facts and add to that list. If there's something that they feel that should have been added that is not there, they will...
Deliberations.
Deliberate on it and make changes, additions, subtractions, whatever. And then use that list to go through the five criteria and vote on it. Mr. Koff.
Who determines what are facts?
The whole board will determine what the facts are at the next meeting.
But someone's developing a list of facts.
Yes.
So someone's developing a list of facts.
Yes, but the whole board will read that list and say, no, I don't agree with this. I think this should say this. I think you should add this. This doesn't make any sense. We'll take this out.
And
that will be done. The five of us will meet next month. We will read through the list at the meeting. No one will see that list but me. Because if I call Ms. Pellegrino and say, look, here's my list. What do you think about this? And then I call Tony and I say, hey, look at this. Read this list. That's illegal. The board can't do those kinds of things. The only time that any of that kind of consideration can happen is in the public, in a meeting. Otherwise, that stuff is against RSA 91A.
Okay, let me ask you another question here.
Sure.
With Boyd absent tonight, what would his input be with that meeting?
I just think we need
to know.
I would suspect that the five of us should make that decision.
He can also review the minutes of this meeting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
and then
I would think that the five of us...
I just think we need to have a...
Yeah, and I will check with Mike and
so
ask...
it doesn't look like...
I'll check with town council, ask him what he thinks.
Something that it shouldn't be.
Yeah, I will ask town council what he thinks about how that should be handled. Because that is important. He wasn't here for this part. And
right.
I mean, yeah, and yes, he can read the minutes, but we'll see. And we don't know if he'll be here for the next meeting or not. So.
Okay. That's what I was wondering.
Dean?
Dean, can I ask you a question, Judy? You've been on the CBA a long time.
Yeah.
Long time.
Yeah.
How many times has this ever been done?
This is new.
Okay.
This is...
It's okay.
Yeah, no, this is not something that has been done, but this is from what I understand, they've talked about it, and if you remember when we had our training last winter, that they suggested that this is a suggestion from, I'm not sure, it was suggested to us by the attorney that this is the way that we should operate to make sure, because we are required now to... when we make a decision to file findings of fact, whether it is a positive decision or a negative decision, we are required to file findings of fact so that if we pass something and a abutter decides that they want to appeal that decision, that a abutter has access to all the facts that we used to make that positive or negative decision. This comes down through the state, that this is what they're suggesting. I mean, it's true, there are some cases that are very easy and we can generally decide them, but we still have to put findings of fact with them. We have to make whether it's a positive or a negative decision.
And don't forget, those have to be based on the evidence in the record.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What RSA does this fall under?
I'm not sure.
676-3?
I'll tell you in a minute.
So really, it started out as case law, Rochester v. Alcorn. So it's been the law forever, but then it was codified effective June or July of 23, I think, or maybe 22.
Yeah, it's very recent.
Summer. Pretty sure it's 676-3, but everything in this business is 670-something.
This is planning boards. So, well, wait a minute.
Once we do this, there's no way for you to respond to anything that we do other than
it says
that's why it's got to be based on evidence in the record.
Ron, this is what it says.
That's the end of the evidence.
The local land use boards, and so this is state law, Dean. The local land use board shall issue a final written decision which either approves or disapproves an application for a local permit and make a copy of the decision available to the applicant. The decision shall include specific findings of fact that support the decision. Failure of the board to make specific written findings of fact supporting a disapproval shall be grounds for automatic reversal and remand by the Superior Court upon appeal in accordance with the time period set forth in RSA 677-5 or RSA 677-15, unless the court determines that there are other factors warranting the disapproval. So if we don't, especially in a denial, provide findings of fact, it's an automatic reversal of our decision in the court. So it's, I think it's important that we are careful in putting them together, and that the board, and we follow the procedures, and because RSA 91A does not allow us to have meetings that are not open to the public, and calling one person, having a telephone chain is considered having a meeting, and it's illegal. Calling Gail and talking, and then calling and calling Tony, and then calling Ron, and then calling Bill, that's considered having a legal meeting.
I understand.
Yeah. So, and the applicant here deserves the right to hear the discussion that ensues upon all of the facts that are determined at the next meeting.
Okay. What was the statute number?
I'm sorry?
I just want to see if my memory is right.
Yeah, you were right. It's 67863, issuance of a decision.
Oh, good, I'm not getting that old yet.
Those are general provisions. It doesn't say planning or zoning. It just says general provisions relating to the issuance of a decision. And then it goes planning board. It goes on to the planning board with their plats and stuff. So, yes, sir.
Kevin Coughlin. In the event that you find against them for whatever reasons you state as facts, what is their recourse from there? Is there an appeal process?
They can go to Superior Court. They can go to the housing. You have to go to court because this is not about housing. So they would have to appeal it to the court.
First, a request for rehearing.
Yes, they would request a rehearing, and then they. So we would have another hearing. They would come in and they would explain their reasons why they think we made an error.
We could be here till next summer.
Let's hope not.
Thanks.
We played that game with a telecommunications tower.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Play that game for a living.
All right, so. If we need a motion from the board to do two things. We need a motion to close the hearing and a motion to continue the meeting and develop findings of fact.
Motion.
Second.
So which? Okay.
What I
motion to close the meeting.
Okay.
And I
second
that.
Yes.
That one.
Okay. So we have a motion on the floor to close the hearing. Is that what you said, or the meeting?
Hearing.
It's
I'm
the
sorry.
Hearing.
I said the hearing.
It's a
hearing.
There's a difference. Okay,
yes.
So we have...
Owl eye.
Keena eye.
Sod eye.
Pellegrino eye.
Steinman's eye.
Okay, so the hearing is now closed. Now we need a motion to develop for someone to develop findings of fact.
So I make a motion to create the findings and facts.
The chairman of the board create that. I think it's important to say that as part of the motion.
So I recommend or make a motion that the chairman of the board create the finding of facts for this meeting.
And I'll second that.
And bring it back to the next meeting.
Yes.
Where they will be discussed. Okay.
How I.
Keena, I.
Sod eye.
Pellegrino eye.
Steinman's eye.
Gentlemen, thank you. Unfortunately, we get to see you. We get to see you.
Formally, we need to know the date.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It will be the fourth Tuesday in June, which is 25th of June, yeah?
6:30?
Yep.
6:30, yes.
6:30. All right.
Babysitters for my granddaughters.
Do we need to review minutes, or are we ready?
I think I would suspect that we could review our minutes at another time.
Okay.
Would you?
Then I would make a motion to close the meeting.
Okay. Is there any other business that we need to come before the board? You got your letter in, right? Before we close the board, we sent your approval, so we need to. Gail.
Amy,
you have Ron's letter. All right, so Ron has submitted a letter requesting reappointment to the board because his term is up. So we need a motion to recommend Ron's, a letter be sent to the Board of Selectmen recommending his reappointment to the board.
Make a motion, Ron be.
Forward, and I'll second that.
Okay. Is there any discussion anybody want to I'm glad you're. I'm glad, Ron, because you have a different perspective than a lot of the rest of us, and I feel really strongly that all the views of the people in town need to be represented. So I'm glad you're staying on the board, and I'm glad you're gonna be here. Okay, so
we just wish you would make more meetings.
It's literally 6 feet.
So any other discussion?
Not you.
Okay, so go for a vote, Ron?
I guess I shouldn't vote on myself.
Oh, you can vote for yourself.
All right.
Al, aye. Keenan, aye.
Zod, aye.
Pellegrino, aye. You have confidence in yourself, buddy.
Yeah.
Okay, and so we can entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay.
Any discussion?
Any discussion? Okay. Ron?
You know, as concerned as I think people, we're done. Right?
Wait. We've got a motion on the floor. We've got a motion on the floor to adjourn the meeting.
Yet.
No, we haven't yet. See you.
How aye.
Tina aye.
Zod aye.
Pellegrino aye.
Simon's aye.
Are we closed, Madam Chairman?
Yes, we are. Our meeting is adjourned.